Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to PhillyFanatics.com's Philly Sports Talk. I am Eric Fisher, with me Gordon Glantz, and a whole lot to talk about this week. You'd think June might be slow, but not this week, and certainly not in Philadelphia. We have the not just the Phillies playing as they continue their free fall, but we have the NBA and NHL drafts this week. NBA draft Thursday night, NHL draft starting on Friday. We're going to talk about Game 7 of the NBA Finals, which is tonight if you're listening to the show live on Sunday. So let's start with the 76ers, though, Gordon. I know you've gone back and forth on this in your own mind. Number one, second, Ben Simmons or Brandon Ingram? Where do they go?
Well, you know, a lot has changed since we last spoke. Not as much in my mind, but, you know, this thing with Simmons not wanting to work out for the Sixers, not quite sure what that's about. If it's some sort of something up his sleeve to try to force their hand, or he just doesn't want to work out for teams because he feels he doesn't have to. But either way, I don't really like it. You know, I don't really like the prima donna attitude, you know, from a guy who played 1 year of college basketball. So, you know, I'm starting to see a different landscape, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Sixers don't surprise us a little bit and maybe do something with that pick to leverage themselves for some more guys. I don't know. You know, another thing that's changed is Dario Saric is, again, I don't know if it's trying to leverage the Sixers for more money or what he's doing, but there was some talk this week that he doesn't necessarily have to come from Turkey this year, and if he's not going to get a lot of playing time, maybe he won't. And I wouldn't, you know, that now puts him in play as possibly a trade chip. So, you know, you have him as a trade chip. You have that number one pick as a trade chip. You have one of your big men as a trade chip. And, you know, could the Sixers, instead of having the one pick, have like 3, 5, and 6 or 4, 5, and 7 or something like that and kind of come away with, you know, a bunch of guards and you know, who knows how this plays out, you know? You know, I think all kinds of scenarios are more in play than before. If not, if they're going to sit with what they have, and, you know, I still have to go with Simmons. I think he's the guy, the better player in terms of tools. He may be a little more high maintenance, but that just comes with the turf in the NBA. I mean, if you took all your high maintenance guys out of the NBA, you wouldn't have many guys left. So, you know, just based on everything he brings to the table, I guess he has to be the guy. But I think there's a lot of scenarios at play, and whether they all play out, then we see a whole different situation on draft night with them maybe getting 3 lottery picks out of the 1 or, you know, just kind of sticking with what they have or maybe acquiring one extra guy, maybe using Saric as a chip there. You know, if all things being equal, I guess I'd have to go with him, but with Simmons. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised, like I said, if they kind of try to convert that into, you know, more guys that they think can help them.
You brought up a whole bunch of different possibilities, Gordon. I'm going to come back to you in a minute. But first, we have Josh Landsberg with us as well. Josh, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Eric. Good to be back.
Yeah, good to have you back. So, Josh, let's get started out without throwing scenarios at you. What do you think the Sixers are going to do with that number one pick on Thursday night?
What do I think they're going to do, or what do I think they should do?
Both. I guess both.
All right, I'll go with what I think they're going to do. It's a really tough call. It's hard to say. I think they're probably going to take Ben Simmons. Because he has been the number one overall pick. He was scouted as the number one overall pick. It was, tanked for Simmons all season long. Ingram kind of developed a little bit later as potential number one pick. And, Simmons has been compared to a LeBron-type player. That's a, you know, once-in-a-generation type player. You don't see that type of player that often. He could do a little bit of everything. He could rebound. He could pass. The only thing is he doesn't have a great shot, which, LeBron James also didn't have a great shot when he came to the league. And to be honest, LeBron still doesn't have a great shot, although he's shown, I know we're going to get to some of the Golden State Cavaliers conversation a little bit later in the show, but LeBron has shown in the past couple games that he can make that outside shot, so he's played really well. But overall, I think LeBron is like 53% from inside the paint and like 35% from 36% from outside the paint. So he doesn't have a great shot, which, you know, doesn't make him Michael Jordan who really worked on a shot and really developed that outside shot, or Kobe Bryant who had a good outside shot. But, you know, so it depends on which direction they want to go. Do they want to go to a guy who's, who does have that good outside shot and can really, you know, Ingram is considered, they're comparing him to Kevin Durant. So which is better, Kevin Durant or LeBron James? I would probably say LeBron James is a better overall player and he can really impact the team more than a Kevin Durant can. So I think the Sixers are going to go with Ben Simmons. But for my money, I might go with Ingram. I think that the Sixers really need shooters on this team. They don't have a lot of shooters. And, you know, there's been talk that you could find a shooter out there. You could find a Kyle Korver. You could find some outside shooters that can kind of help this team out. But I think Ingram is probably the more polished player overall. Simmons probably has the higher ceiling maybe overall. But I think that Ingram can impact the team right away. He does have a really good outside shot. He's 6'10". He's got a 7'3" wingspan. I really like him a lot. He went to Duke and he led them to the tournament, something that Simmons didn't do. And, of course, they had some coaching issues there and some chemistry issues. But Simmons started out really hot to start the year and then kind of dwindled the second half of the season. And Ingram was strong throughout the season. So I think the Sixers are probably going to take Simmons. But for me, I would actually go with Ingram. I think that not that he's the better player, but I think he might fit the Sixers better in terms of a shooter, a big man, but also a guy who can shoot from the outside and can really spread the floor and help the, you know, kind of the inside-outside game, help out all around. So I think that it's a really tough decision. Another kind of wild card out there is the Sixers could actually trade that pick to the Lakers if they really want Ingram instead of Simmons, because Simmons has been on record saying he wants to play for the Lakers, and the Lakers would probably take Simmons, and maybe the Sixers can get another pick in the first round or second round, kind of get another pick in there. You know, we know that they like to trade picks. Maybe they go from number one to number two if they really like Ingram better than Simmons, and they get another pick out of it. So that's just kind of a wild card situation to throw out there. So I think anything's possible. But if I had to guess, I'd say the Sixers do take Simmons with the number one overall pick. But for me, I would go with Ingram.
Gordon and Josh, you guys both alluded to the fact that the that Simmons, well, not coming out and saying it, has given indications. Maybe it's from not, you know, doing a workout with the Sixers. And I know they went out and talked to him Thursday before Game 6 of the Cavaliers series with the Warriors. You know, and Josh, you mentioned, well, he seems to want to play for the Lakers, seem to give him some indications there. Gordon, you mentioned a whole bunch of trade scenarios. I hadn't even thought of throwing Saric in as a trade, and clearly the Sixers appear to be frustrated that they're not going to get, that might not get Saric to come over this year. Quite frankly, financially, it makes no sense for him to come over this year. He's better off, you know, unless he gets hurt. That would be the only wild card that would work against him. He's better off. He won't be tied to the rookie salary scale. The salary cap is expected to go up. So let's leave him out of it for a second, though. A team with a whole bunch of picks is the Boston Celtics, including one of the Sixers picks, the first pick in the second round that they got through Miami, which used to belong to the Sixers. Gordon, if the Celtics like one of these guys a lot, whether it's Ingram or Simmons, or maybe they want Jamal Murray there and afraid he's going to go, let's say the Lakers offered you the 3 and the 16, and maybe even that first pick of the second round to move up 2 spots to number 1, would you do it?
I would have to think long and hard about it. You know, if I could do that and move Saric for the 4 pick, you know, and then you can come away with, you know, Dunn and Bobby Hield or somebody Hield or something like that. You're looking at, you know, a backcourt or Jamal Murray, either way. You know, yeah, and then at 17, you can still get a good player. There's a Russian or a center or Serbian center or somebody like that who they feel is like NBA ready. He may not be a superstar, a big man, but he's a guy who physically is ready to at least be a backup, and he's a guy who'd be sitting there around there. And there's that small point guard. He's from Kentucky. You know, he's a guy that could grab there.
Tyler Ulis.
Ulis, right. So, and really, the size is probably the only thing that's keeping him a little lower in the draft. You know, he's a guy who gives you a lift off the bench and. You know, so, yeah, and don't forget also, you know, you mentioned the Celtics. And one crazy scenario I did in my mind, I do that in my mind a lot, you know, I think they do like Okafor. And maybe you could trade them just Okafor you know, to for the third pick, and maybe you might have to give them one of the picks that you have in the 20s. Sixers have two picks in the 20s, and maybe get the 17, or make them both picks in the 20s and get the 17 in that early second. And then you still have that number one pick in your hip pocket to play with, you know. And then you could really load yourself up with several picks, you know, if you then take that and parlay that into something else and parlay Saric into something else, you could get yourself you could come away conceivably with Dunn, Hield, and Murray and have a three-guard rotation for the next 10 years. and have your two big men in Noel and Embiid. So, you know, there are all kinds of possibilities, but, you know, Artie might just do, you know, we're expecting all these things because this is kind of we've been conditioned, you know, by Sam Hinkie, but you know, they may go a more conventional route and just take Simmons and you know, take somebody at you know, the two picks they have in the 20s, just take guys, you know, either good college players or maybe a foreign-born guy and just go that route. But, you know, there are options. I mean, they do have one too many big men, although I, again, the more conservative route would be if Embiid's even healthy before you go away and before you turn around and trade away a big man. But they might want to, if they really get a lot of offers for Okafor, it can really, you know, you don't really need three guys there. I mean, three is a crowd. Especially if they, I'm sure one of these teams, if you make a trade like that, would also throw you a salary dump because everybody wants to dump salaries. So maybe somebody gives you a salary dump big man who could at least be a backup, you know, in the front court so that you're not completely, you know, short on big men if you give one of those young guys away. So there's a lot of options that will be very interesting. Even if they don't do anything, it's very interesting. If they do or if they kind of do a little bit of what we're talking about but not all of it, it's interesting as well.
Yeah, and you're right. There are some centers out there from Croatia. And I'm talking mid-round guys. There's actually two centers from Croatia, Zizic and Zubac. Are out there. Bryce Johnson, right. Power forward from North Carolina, but you figure those aren't the guys the Sixers are going to go for later in the draft. They have kind of a logjam up there. There's a guy from Australia as well, Thon Maker.
And the guy from China as well. Yeah.
They're from all over the world. We've got centers from all over the world, and right here from the United States, Diamond Stone, who lives in Maryland. But Josh, let's take you into later in that round. And just where they're looking, you know, the Sixers, no question, need some wing players, and they need point guards, and they need a shooting guard. They need a little everything, but, you know, guys on the perimeter. So let's take they take Simmons first rather than Ingram, who's more of a perimeter player. I'm going to throw some position guys at you, and you tell me what you would do if they're there. So let's start with guards. Gordon brought up Tyler Ulis, point guard from Kentucky. Demetrius Jackson, point guard from Notre Dame, could still be around there. Denzel Valentine, a shooting guard from Michigan State, who, because of what's believed to be a knee injury, is dropping down in the draft. People are talking about him as a top 10 pick. What would you do down there, 24 and 26, if one of those guys was available? I'm going to give you a forwards in a second, but if those guards are available. Any of them pique your interest?
I like Tyler Ulis a lot. I think he's a good player. I'm looking at Chad Ford's mock draft right now, and at 24, he has Malik Beasley, a guard from Florida State, going to the Sixers. And at 26, he has Patrick McCaw, the guard from UNLV, going to the Sixers. So those are a couple of players out there that Chad Ford, at least, is pretty good with his draft. I've looked at his mock drafts in past years, and he's been pretty good with the mock drafts. So, those are a couple guys out there, but I like Tyler Ulis a lot. If he's still there at 24, I think they should take him. Ish Smith, the current Sixers point guard, is a nice backup point guard, but he's not a starting point guard in the league. So I think that Tyler Ulis would be a good pick for the Sixers, and he could be a starting point guard in this league, a late-round pick, a good find for the Sixers.
Is that Brian Colangelo calling you on the other line?
No, I don't know. That must have been Gordon's line.
That was my phone, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was it Brian Colangelo?
Yeah, that was actually Ron Hextall on the other line, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Okay, we'll get to him later on, so I'm glad he's on. Josh, let's say the Sixers go for a wing player, though, and certainly an interest in this area is DeAndre Bembry from St. Joe's, the A-10 player of the year. comes out as a junior. Do you think that's a good move to get somebody like him, or do you think maybe playing in the hometown, you know, he's not from here necessarily, but playing where he played in college would be a problem, putting more pressure on him?
No, I think it would be a good thing playing in Philadelphia. I think that having a hometown guy is a good thing. The question is he good enough to make it, to be in that position? And DeAndre Bembry, you mentioned Ford from St. Joseph's. Chad Ford has him going 25 to the Clippers, so he's right in that range, in that 24-26 pick range for the Sixers. So the Sixers could take him if they're looking for another wing player, but I really think they need a point guard or a shooting guard. The situation with the Celtics really interests me a lot. You mentioned, you know, the question is Joel Embiid's health. Is he going to be healthy? And Okafor, you have a sure thing. You know what you have with him. He's a potential 20-10 guy. He doesn't play a lot of defense, so that's why you have a guy like Nerlens Noel, who can be a rim protector and can come off and be that type of Theo Ratliff guy that can block shots off the ball. So I don't know if I would trade Okafor or not, because you don't know what Embiid's going to bring you, but the Celtics, as you mentioned, do like Okafor a lot. And if you could trade him and get some more picks in there, a guy like Buddy Hield could be a pick that the Sixers like. I don't know how he's going to translate to the NBA. He had a really great college career. I don't know if he's going to be a star in the NBA, but he's certainly better than Stauskas, who's the Sixers' current shooting guard. He's certainly, I think, an upgrade there. And I think that he can shoot the three-point shot. He can spread the floor. And if they could get a guy like Buddy Hield earlier in the draft, if they make some kind of trade, I think that would be a good move by the Sixers as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting moving parts of this draft. The overseas guys, the two Providence players, Gordon mentioned Don earlier, the guard, and Ben Bentil, who's power forward, who might go late in the first round. A lot of really interesting scenarios. Teams could move around. Celtics have a ton of picks, and somehow the Sixers don't have a second-round pick, which maybe that's why Sam Hinkie quit. I don't know. The lack of a second-round pick. Let's switch to the NBA Finals. Game 7 is tonight. Gordon, what Cavaliers trying to come – the first team to come back from a 3-1 deficit and win the NBA Finals. LeBron had 41 in each of the past two games. What do you see happening tonight?
Big game. Well, I mean, you know, I don't know where Curry's head's at right now. So, you know, big game. I mean, my money would be on LeBron. I know you personally, you have personal issues with him, but you know, big game when that makes, you know, great play. When you talk about great players, it's the guys who just step up at the biggest moments, you know, and he's just the kind of guy along the floor. I want the ball in his hands. Whether, you know, Josh mentioned, you know, all of a sudden he hits outside shots when an outside shot's needed. And, you know, he just seems to step up everything, his rebounding, his assists, his and anything he needs to do, you know, his rebounding at both ends of the floor. You know, when it hits crunch time, you know, he doesn't shrink. He wants the ball and he wants to make things happen. And, you know, I know that's against all odds that a team would come back from a 3-1 deficit, but, and you know, I really call it, you know, I would have to slightly lean that way, just because I think it will be a very close game. And, you know, when it gets down to the fourth quarter, when it gets down to crunch time, you know, I think he's a guy who can make a difference. I will say this, I think it's just been one of those classic vintage series that we kind of grew up on. Maybe Josh is a little younger, but, you know, those Sixers-Lakers, Lakers-Celtics, you know, some of those series, even going back a little earlier, there used to be series between, you know, the Washington Bullets at the time and Seattle Supersonics. They had some great series in the late 70s. And, you know, this is kind of like those series. It's been physical. There's been a lot of ill will. And, you know, there's always talk that NBA players don't have passion if they don't really care. But, you know, maybe we've seen poor sportsmanship and some of those things. But, you know, I don't think it's lacked for passion. I think it's been pretty good for the game. I think it's been, you know, not just entertaining because of dunks or great plays, but I think it's been entertaining because just the, you know, the competitiveness and both teams strive to win.
See, I have a different take on this, and I'll go to Josh in a second, and I think it's been the series is missing something. I think I agree with you on the passion. I agree with you on the physical play, and there's a dislike and nastiness. I love all that. What this series needs, and maybe we'll get it tonight, is a great game. There hasn't been a great game. There really hasn't. Yeah. There's been some good runs and stuff, but we really haven't had a great game. Most of the games have been very lopsided, certainly at least during the second half. So hopefully we get a game to elevate the series. It has the star power. It has the passion, but I don't think we've seen the great game where both teams are playing well at the same time. Josh, what do you think is going to happen tonight?
Well, Eric, you went exactly where I was going to go with my point. I have to disagree with Gordon a little bit also. I think it has been a good series in a lot of ways, but it's been extremely lopsided. I mean, with the exception of Game 4, which is a little bit closer, I'm going to run down the scores here real quick. 15-point victory for Golden State in Game 1, 33-point victory in Game 2, and Cleveland came back with a 30-point victory. Golden State won by 11 in Game 4. That was the closest game. Then Cleveland won by 15 in Game 5. Cleveland won again in Game 6 by 14, and now we have Game 7. This might be the first game that's under 10 points. I didn't look this up, Eric, and maybe you did, or Gordon, maybe you know. But I don't know if there's ever been an NBA Finals game series that went 7 games where none of the games were 10 points or less. So far, none of the games have been 10 points or less. Unbelievable. So I think that we did see a competitive game in Game 4, and Golden State kind of pulled away at the end of that. But we haven't seen a close game. I think we're going to get it tonight. I think it's going to be a really close game. I think it's going to be under 10 points, and I think we're going to have a great game. The way I see it going, and I picked, just for myself, with my family and friends, I picked Golden State to win in 7 games. So that's the scenario right now. It could happen. I think they might have won in 5 if they had Draymond Green in Game 5. I think that was a big loss. And whether he should have been suspended or not is a whole other story. But I think that I'm going against my original gut. My original gut was Golden State in 7, and I'm picking Cleveland also. I think that they're just playing really well right now. I think Curry and Klay Thompson have been off all series. Draymond Green has been a little bit off, and you have Andrew Bogut hurt, who's not, you know, the superstar of the team, but he is a rim protector and a guy that can play well for them, can get minutes. You have Andre Iguodala, who's playing, but he's playing with a hurt back, and he's a little banged up, and he's one of their key players. So I think with injuries, you know, you don't want to say that if Cleveland does win, that that's the excuse for going to bad injuries, but it is a factor. And you know, the team who wins, you don't think about it. The Sixers won a championship back in the 80s about Michael Cooper playing for the Lakers, and they swept them. So people don't always remember that. They just remember the Sixers won the championship in 83. But I think that Cleveland's going to win tonight, but a lot of the analysts are picking Cleveland. A lot of times, Eric and then Gordon, you know, when that happens, when everyone's on one side, it ends up being the other way, and Golden State wind up winning. So it will be really interesting to see what happens. Once again, I'm picking Cleveland to win. I kind of cover myself because I originally picked Golden State to win in 7, but I'm going against that. I'm picking Cleveland to win this game. I just think LeBron and Kyrie are playing out of their minds right now. Kyrie, I believe, has 4 straight 30-plus point games. LeBron went for 41 in the last 2 games. So they're just playing so well. And Kevin Love, I saw a story about him that they're kind of using him as a decoy. LeBron compared him to Chris Bosh when he was there in Miami, and LeBron and Dwayne Wade were the stars of the team. And Chris Bosh didn't really do much that showed up on the stat sheet, but he kind of acted as a decoy and let those guys do their thing. So that's the way I think Kevin Love is acting. He's not, you know, hitting a lot of threes or making a lot of plays or getting a lot of rebounds, but the Warriors still have to worry about him on defense, and because of that, it's opening up the floor for LeBron and Kyrie Irving. Kyrie's just made some unbelievable individual plays, some unbelievable shots, and I think that it's going to go Cleveland's way tonight.
I'm just going to quickly go the other way. Josh, same factors you cited, and Gordon cited some too. I just can't believe – I can't see LeBron scoring 40 points again for the 3rd straight game. I can't see Kyrie Irving shooting the way he shot, continuing that. And at the same time, I can't see Golden State shooting as poorly as they did in Game 6. They scored 11 points in the first quarter. I just can't see that happening again. So I'm going to lean Golden State, just saying the things that happened the last 2 games can't continue for a 3rd straight. All right, let's switch to the NHL. We'll see what happens tonight, and hopefully we get a great game out of it. I really hope we do. Gordon, the NBA isn't the only league holding its draft this week. The NHL draft starts Friday, and as you alluded to, Ron Hextall called you earlier on the other line there, and hopefully gave you some good insight. The Flyers have 10 picks. So, you know, we can't go through all the picks here. They have 2 in the second round, 1 in the first round, 2 in the second round, a 3rd, a 4th. 2 in the 3rd, I believe, too. I'm sorry. A 4th, a 5th, 2 and a 6th, and a 7. I think I have that right for their 10. Yeah. But let's look at that number 1 pick. They're picking 18th overall. Who are some possibilities there? What position do you see them going for? Couple players you think they could go for in that spot, 18th overall? Barring a trade up, of course. So let's keep them at 18 for now.
Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting draft because There's a lot of parity between players. It's just going to be kind of like, what do you like, and you know, what your priority is. And when that happens, I mean, do you kind of stay put? Do you maybe trade back and pick up extra picks? Do you just target one guy you really like and move up and get him? So, you know, I think there's some possibilities for Flyers in all those directions. But assuming they stay at 18, where they're sitting, there's a lot of, like, power forwards. Guys, and you know, tradition with the Flyers is they do like guys who are bigger as opposed to guys who are smaller. And I have no problem with that as long as they're skilled. What I've had a problem with in the past with them is they just, you know, take a guy because he's big and he's strong and he has hands of stone, and they don't seem to care about that. But, you know, the Jason Bowens and some of those picks they've had in their history. A name that's been kind of mentioned with them is Max Jones. He's a junior player. He's 6'2", 180. And that's 180 is pretty good for an 18-year-old kid. I mean, you have to keep that in mind when some of these guys aren't fully, grown, although there is a defenseman, Logan Stanley, who's 6'7", 225. So there are some guys like Moran when he came out. And there's another guy who's close to 6'5", he's 210 pounds. He's really a wild card in the draft. His name is Riley Tufte, because he decided to play high school hockey this year instead of playing, you know, either in the USHL, which a lot of people do before they move on to play college hockey. And he also, it's interesting, you know, kind of a Bobby Clark throwback there. He has childhood diabetes as well. And I think that might hurt his draft stock a little bit, and the fact that he was Mr. Hockey in Minnesota and everything. His stats were off the charts because he was so much better than everybody else. But he's a big kid, like I said. He's close to 6'5", and 210. And, he's a guy, even though he's ranked a little lower in the first round, he's a guy that maybe they trade back for. Or they just take an 18. And then another guy I really like for them is Kiefer Bellows. He's kind of been all over the place in some mock drafts. And if the name sounds familiar, he's the son of Brian Bellows, the great player. Well, I'll say great player, very good player who played in the 80s, played for, I guess, the old Minnesota North Stars. He's a guy who has a chance to he was a center for his junior team, but on the U.S. under 18 team, he played left wing on a line with a guy named Clayton Keller, who is going to go higher in the draft. And they really worked well together. And what you saw from Bellows is he's a real pure goal scorer, which the Flyers can really use. They have some forward prospects, but they're stronger on the blue line, and even they're stronger with some goalie prospects. They could really use some guys who are natural scorers, in their system. And, you know, he's another guy, if he falls to them, or he may be a guy they target, want to move up a few spots and get. So he's another guy to keep an eye on, just because the Flyers like to keep it in the family. Jeff Chychrun's son, Jacob Chychrun, is a high-ranked defenseman, a little higher than where they're going to be picking, but maybe they want to target him and move up as well. So that's some ideas, some names that, you know, of course, now they mentioned a bunch of names, they won't take any of those guys.
Yeah, I've seen Jacob Chychrun. A couple guys, just since you mentioned, Josh, I'll probably get to you right after in the archive, right after we sign off here off the live show. But Jacob Chychrun, I've seen him as high as in the top 10. If he's sitting there, you're right, if he's down there in the 18, the Flyers might not be able to pass him up down there, even though, you know, they're looking – certainly they look like they need forwards in their system. I went to school in the Midwest during Brian Bellows' career when he was with the North Stars. And I have to tell you, this is before every – you know, you could get games all over the place. It was in the era where cable was just kind of really kicking up in terms of sports. And so I got to see him, though, being in the Midwest a lot more often than maybe people did. Boy, if his kid is – anywhere near as good a player as Brian Bellows was, if Kiefer's that good, he'd be a great pick. But it looks like if the Flyers stay at 18, they're certainly going to be able to fill that forward need. Big power forwards, there's a whole bunch of them there. We'll let Ron Hextall figure out which one's the best one.
I missed one name, Julian Gauthier.
Just hang on until we go to the other side, because after the live show. So people have to call back in and listen to the archive in order to hear your picks. I just want to remind people, check out PhillyFanatics.com. Stuff on the NBA final, Game 7 tonight. We'll have a Phillies notebook on the Phillies free fall, NBA preview, draft preview, NHL draft preview, all sorts of great stuff. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Mike Gordon, go ahead and give us the names.
Julian Gauthier, he's another power forward. I just kind of missed over when I was looking at some of these names here. He's 6'3", 220. Like I said, that's excellent size for an 18-year-old kid. I have a Hockey News draft guide, and you look at the faces of some of these kids. They look like they should be, clearing your table at a restaurant, busboys. It's sort of a reality check how young these guys are. And how their careers, even if they've been played in all kinds of world tournaments, how their careers can go any different way when you're trying to evaluate. It's much like the baseball draft, 18-year-olds. But he's another guy with good size and some scoring ability. Plays in the Quebec League, where stats are often inflated. He's another guy to keep an eye on. And I think another thing we have to look at, Eric, will the Flyers pull the trigger on trading somebody who may not be in their long term future, like a Mark Streit or Nick Schultz, and maybe try to get an extra late first round pick or a couple second round picks or something like that from guys like that. So, that's something else to look for on the draft.
Yeah, they definitely have some guys with salary that they'd like to move if they can to clear out. And they don't necessarily have to get back a player this year because, like you said, and they have so many great guys in their system. Josh, so the Flyers have 10 picks. And I guess the question is, at that 18, Gordon, the guys Gordon mentioned are all, like Gordon said, are all 18 years old. Do they have to come up with a guy who can play next year, or do you think Flyer fans will be content with them, stockpiling the system, so to speak, with those 10 picks?
Yeah, I think they're continuing to build for the future. I think there's a 19-year-old out there who Gordon didn't mention, who I think the Flyers could possibly take, and he could potentially play. Even though he's, really young, Sidney Crosby, I believe, entered the league at 19, not that he's Sidney Crosby, but he could potentially come to the Flyers this season, and that's Julian Gauthier, big forward. He's 6'3". He's really a good skater as well. Gordon mentioned you want a big guy, but you want a guy that can skate also. He's a scorer. The Flyers lack that kind of sniper. They do have some good forwards on the team like Giroux and Voracek and Simmons and guys like that, but they lack that guy that can really score. Can really be a sniper, and that's what Julian does. He's able to be that big-time scorer. He's also Canadian. A lot of good players come out of Canada, so I like that as well. And he brings a much-needed skill set to the Flyers that they're lacking. Once again, they have some strong complementary scorers in Shen and Couturier, but they support forwards in Raffle and Reed, but they don't have that true sniper, as I mentioned, a guy who can score on a regular basis, and I think Julian Gauthier brings that to the table. So I think that he's a player they could look at. A couple other guys they could look at 18 is defenseman Jake Bean, forward Max Jones, and forward Alex DeBrincat. Those are some other guys they could look at as well that could help this team now and for the future. But they're continuing to build. They did make the playoffs this season when we thought they probably weren't going to. It was probably a little bit earlier. And they do have guys that they drafted last season that could potentially play for them this season. So I think that, they're still a couple, maybe two or three years away from really competing, but they could make the playoffs again this upcoming year and maybe advance a little bit instead of being the 8th seed, maybe be the 5 or the 6th seed or something like that, and kind of continue to advance and continue to grow as a team. So I think Flyers fans have always been patient. They haven't won a cup in, 40 years since 75. So Flyers fans still continue to sell out that building and still continue to come because they make the playoffs more often than they don't make the playoffs. So they're always competitive, and I think that they're trying to win a Stanley Cup. That's the end goal. And Ron Hextall wants to build with these 10 players, guys that can help for the future, not just for now, but for the future. So if he selects some of these younger guys, these 18, 19-year-old guys that aren't going to come up for two or three years, I think Flyers fans will be okay with that and they'll be patient and realize that this is building for the future and they want to not only be in the playoffs in two or three years, they want to contend for a Stanley Cup championship. So I think that's really what they're looking for.
Okay. Well, we'll see what happens Friday.
Real quick, Erica, Jake Bean, interesting with Jake Bean, who's actually the defensive partner of Travis Sanheim in Calgary Hitmen. So,
Calgary Hitmen,
they would have familiarity with each other. Yeah, so he'll probably be gone before they pick, but he is considered the best puck-moving defenseman in the draft. being. And he kind of came out of nowhere this year. Nobody was really high on him. And one thing to keep in mind in his middle rounds, we're not going to know a lot of the names, you know, the guys, but it's really a deep draft in terms of American kids who already committed to a lot of the major programs at Boston University and Minnesota Duluth. And, you know, you're going to see a lot of the Flyers maybe grab a lot of those guys. Again, it's a lot of power forwards, bigger guys. See the Flyers grab a lot of those guys in those middle rounds. And you can keep tabs. And because they play college hockey, they can play longer than they can in junior hockey. You kind of have to make a decision on them after 2 years of junior hockey. You have a 3 or 4 year career in college hockey before you decide if you want those guys, if you think those guys are NHL ready, or you can send them to the minors. So I think they're going to love, and there are a lot of those guys in this draft. The last year's draft had a lot of Europeans in the middle rounds. I think I did an article for you, but this year, a lot of those American kids, good size, still need to kind of work on their skating, things like that, but they're going to some big programs, and you could see a lot of those kids picked up in the middle rounds.
So it seems like it's a really good year for the Flyers to have a lot of picks and have those 10, you know, those 10 picks and a lot of those.
Yeah, developmental-type guys. Developmental-type guys, for sure. Yeah.
I was going to ask you guys about the Phillies, but we don't have enough time, and maybe that's for the best as they free fall.
That's fine.
Yeah. Six straight losses. Not just losses, they're just getting bombed. They'd given up, not before today, they'd given up 13 home runs in their previous three games. They're losing ugly. They're not scoring any runs for the most part. I think the last time they scored more than three runs was last Monday when they beat Toronto 7-0. And since then, it's been a three run, and everything else is two ones and meaningless runs. And just, it's awful. So, We'll worry about them. Maybe not even next week. We'll do a post-draft show. So we won't have that much Phillies talk next week, hopefully, too. But I will have a Phillies notebook up for people to read about. So let's go right to final thoughts then. Josh, welcome back, and hit us with your final thought.
All right. I'm going to go to probably my favorite player to ever play the game. He was right. I was in 11th grade, I believe, when the Sixers went to the finals in 2001, and the city went crazy. Everyone had a Sixers flag, and everyone was going crazy. And that's, of course, Allen Iverson. There's been a couple specials on him lately. If you haven't seen him, check him out. They're great. Talking about how he made the Hall of Fame. He had a one-on-one interview with Steve Smith, I believe, and a couple other specials on him. And he just changed the game in so many ways culturally. Shaq called him the best little man to ever play the game. You know, that's saying a lot considering you got guys like Isaiah Thomas and some of the other guys that are great players at 6 feet or shorter to play the game. And he was just so much fun to watch, and especially, you know, talked about how that Lakers team was a juggernaut that hadn't lost until they got to the finals, and the Sixers upset them in game one of the finals and won in overtime, and Iverson went off. And I think in that playoffs run, he had three games of 50 points. So he was a transcendent player, a great player to watch, very deserving of the Hall of Fame. And it's just sad that he never got that championship ring. He never had the supporting cast around him to do it. I really believe, you know, if a guy like Shaq was on his team, he probably would have won a few championships, just like Kobe did. He's, you know, probably not quite as good as Kobe. Obviously, Kobe had a longer career and an overall better player. But Iverson, just the ability to get to the cup, his quickness and his speed. He didn't always have the greatest field goal percentage from the outside, but when he got hot, he would really play well, and just a great player to watch. And, you know, really proud to be from Philadelphia and be a Sixers fan and have a guy like that. He's just, you know, he's remembered for his practice speech a little bit, but a guy like Wilt Chamberlain never practiced either, and he's one of the greatest players to ever play the game. So, you know, there's a little bit, take that with a grain of salt, and he had a great coach in Larry Brown, and fortunately he didn't get that championship, but a great player to watch, and, you know, seeing those specials was fun for me to watch. So that's my final thought for today.
Thank you, Josh. Gordon, final thought?
It's kind of ironic Steve Smith gets the one-on-one interview with him when I covered the team. Steve Smith covered the team for the Inquirer, and he and Allen Iverson, to put it mildly, had a love-hate relationship. So that's kind of a funny postscript to that. We lost I don't know if this happened. I wasn't on the show last week, and I don't know exactly when it happened, but we lost Gordie Howe. Age 88, one of the all-time great hockey players, considered the greatest hockey player until Gretzky and Lemieux came along. But I guess you could say, you know, he's sort of the Ty Cobb or Babe Ruth of hockey, and I had the great opportunity to meet Gordie Howe for an extended period of time. Him and Mark Howe, pretty much I had alone access with them for an interview for a good hour and a half. And, you know, I know it's Father's Day, and you know, at the time Gordie wasn't doing too well, and you could see he wasn't doing too well. And you could see the father-son relationship and, you know, the amount of care that Mark Howe was showing toward his father. And it was at a medical facility. It was a type of massage called Rolfing. I don't want to get too much into what that is, but, you know, and the guy who ran the place invited me to come, and that's how I, you know, while they were being worked on, I talked to them, and I talked to whichever one wasn't being worked on at the time. But, you know, I know Gordie Howe had run into some health issues, and, you know, I wasn't, you know, you're sad when you see the headline go past that he passed away, but, you know, to live to 88, to have the impact on the game that he had, for me to have had the opportunity to meet him and to break all the rules of journalism and ask for an autograph on my hockey stick was, you know, I have no regrets of doing that. I have the photo from that day. It's on my Facebook page, and, you know, it's my, yep, and, you know, and the thing about Gordie Howe, he knew how important he was, and, you know, if he met people, he would always take the time to talk to them. If he took photos for a picture, he didn't ask for money for an autograph at a card show or things like that. He would always give you a little elbow. He gave me an elbow and a hip check right before that picture. He knew how important he was, but yet he didn't take himself too seriously at the same time. And I think a lot of the athletes of today can take a cue from that in terms of being an ambassador for themselves and their sport.
Yeah, every story I've read talks about just what you said, Gordon, what a great guy he was. And in fact, I think in Sports Illustrated, Wayne Gretzky talks about meeting him for the first time, and you know how gracious Gordie Howe was at the time, and you know, continued to be, and we saw him again. But certainly, yeah, we lost a couple great ones. We talked about last week. I talked about we lost a couple great ones with, you know, locally Rick McLeish and then Muhammad Ali, of course, and Gordie Howe. Really two of the all-time greats in their sport, Ali and Howe, and transcended their sports in a lot of ways, Ali obviously, but I think Howe did too at the time he was playing. Talk about a guy who played into his 50s. I mean, think about that, playing hockey into your 50s. You know, most of us, I don't think, can play street hockey at age 50, let alone at the NHL level and the competitiveness that takes. Josh, also one of the best subs, since you brought up Allen Iverson, a little bit timely because, of course, the head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers is the guy that Iverson stepped over in that NBA Finals you referenced, and that's Tyronn Lue. Yeah. My final thoughts, we haven't talked about the Philadelphia Eagles at all, and they had a big deal signing Fletcher Cox this past week, and, you know, they had a great offseason. And, you know, they re-signed Fletcher Cox, they re-signed Zach Ertz, they re-signed Lane Johnson, they re-signed this guy, they re-signed that guy, they acquired Carson Wentz, and it doesn't mean a darn thing if they don't win games in the regular season next year and the year after. Howie Roseman's betting that these guys he saw, I see what he's doing. It looks like he's a plan. He's executing it. He did a terrific job of executing it, getting rid of some dead wood salary and some of the Chip Kelly acquisitions and re-signing the guys he wants to build his team around. What we're going to see this year, next year, the year after, is whether he's building his team around the right guys. Did he pick the right guys? Are these guys as good as he thinks they are? You know, this, as good as they are, this team hasn't won a playoff game in 7 or 8 seasons now. So are these the right guys? We're going to fight. You hope they are, and some of them look like they are. But let's not, you know, just like Joe Banner used to win, the Eagles would win the salary cap championship every offseason and pat themselves on the back. Howie Roseman might have won the re-signing your own players championship this offseason, but you don't get any trophies for that. You get trophies for winning the Super Bowl. So we'll see if it translates to that in the future. That's it for this week's show. Gordon Glantz, Josh Landsberg, great job. Thank you guys for being on here. And please check out everybody. Check out PhillyFanatics.com. Lots of great draft coverage coming up, pre-draft and post-draft. Not to mention Philly's notebooks, lots of other great stuff. Thank you for listening. Again, for Gordon and Josh, I am Eric Fisher, and we will talk to you next weekend.